This is the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Lectures, radio shows, and more on demand at sevillepodcast.com. Local cartoonist Jen Sorensen was the inaugural guest in the Writer House Summer Reading Series on Wednesday, June 11, 2008. Sorensen gave a talk illustrated with slides from her newest collection of Slowpoke comic strips, One Nation, Oh My God. Afterward, she answered questions from the audience and signed copies of her book.
So most of you probably know my cartoon from the Seville Weekly, but it actually runs in a lot of other papers like the Seville Weekly around the country. It's been running in the Village Voice for the past year, and sometimes it appears in national publications like the last issue of Ms. Magazine, and it's run in the LA Times a few times. And so miraculously, I've managed to make a living as a full-time cartoonist for the past few years. I would make a distinction between Slowpoke, the cartoon, and Slowpoke Rodriguez, the cartoon character. This is Speedy Gonzalez's brother. Just please note that I had nothing to do with that. Before I start showing cartoons, I'll tell you a little bit about myself. I grew up in Lancaster County, Pennsylvania, and that is the home of the Amish and Scrapple, Shoe Fly Pie, and world-famous Turkey Hill ice cream. You know, I actually applied for a job at the Turkey Hill Dairy one summer as a high school student, and they just kind of looked at me funny. But I thought I'd mention that since Pennsylvanians have been, especially small-town Pennsylvanians, have been getting a lot of press over the past few months during the presidential primaries. So I thought I'd just let you know you have a real, live, small-town Pennsylvania girl here in front of you, the pinnacle of authenticity. Of course, I did leave Pennsylvania at age 17 to come here, go to UVA. And like so many UVA students, I just never really got around to leaving Charlottesville. I won't tell you how many years it's been now, but I like it here. It's a very comfortable place to live. My new book is called Slowpoke, One Nation, Oh My God, and it collects the past few years of my cartoons along with commentary, which I've written for every cartoon, which gives you a bit of background info, you know, some historical context, and also just, you know, what was going through my mind when I wrote it at the time. And it's got a nice glossy cover, which I find very, you know, thrilling and exciting, and I think you'll find it looks very nice and shiny. So what I'm going to do is read a bunch of my cartoons, and then I will take some questions and answers, I'll be giving the answers. And then I'd be happy to doodle in any books that you may want me to sign. So I thought I'd kick off with this one, which is towards the beginning of the book. Hey, denizens of the highway, having trouble keeping track of all the loopy car decals out there? Then it sounds like you need the field guide to magnetic ribbons. Support our troops? As if anyone doesn't. I support magnetic ribbon manufacturers in China. I support something, but I forget what. Memorial for lost magnetic ribbon that fell off a car. I like cheese puffs. Clown on board. Holier than thou. And my ribbon can kick your ribbon's ass. Now, one thing I've noticed, as the Iraq War has sort of faded in popularity, you really don't see as many of these magnetic ribbons. And it kind of makes me wonder, where have all the ribbons gone? Have they all fallen off the cars? Or are they not supporting the troops anymore? I'm not sure. I will say I have one of my cousins, he just shipped out to Iraq for his second deployment, and he was actually in the first Iraq War too. So he's been there a few times now. So we've spent $339 billion so far on a war justified by trumped-up intelligence that has killed 2,826 Americans and probably hundreds of thousands of Iraqis, made Iraq radioactive with depleted uranium, and caused civil war, only to make terrorism worse. Heck, we may as well have spent that money on 6 copies of Michael Bolton Sings Wham for every person on Earth. Note, may incite jihad. Installing a solid gold Cheney as the new moon of Mars. a stupid drunken bet with Putin. Okay, 339 billion says the chicken comes to me first. A giant butt made of $339 billion. Oh my. A giant butt made of $339 billion set on fire. Our hypothesis that it burns was correct. And, you know, this cartoon was dated right after I drew it, basically, because all of the numbers have gone up dramatically since then. I guess economists are predicting that the war is going to cost, I think, $2 to $3 trillion over time. And I think the number of Americans killed now is now somewhere north of 4,000. So, and I think it's $12.5 million every hour is a statistic I heard recently. Factoid fun. This week, spotlight on John Edwards' hair. Brought to you by Smart Bombs Breakfast Cereal. Treat your cranium to depleted uranium. From the What's More Wasteful department, the number of John Edwards' haircuts it takes to equal one Iraq war is 1.05 billion and counting. That's one haircut a week for the next 20 million years. The average human head has 100,000 hairs. This means John Edwards has fewer hairs than the number of people who have died in Darfur. On one hand, we have a cross-section of Edwards' scalp, and on the other hand, we have genocide. If John Edwards' hair had been president for the past few years, the country would be in better shape than it is now. Should we escalate in Iraq, sir? I'll take your silence as a no. You know, we could fire U.S. attorneys who don't abuse their power. Or not. Now, I drew this one after that story came out about John Edwards and his $400 haircut. And I get a little tired of these gotcha stories. But I don't exactly understand the obsession with John Edwards' hair. Because it wasn't just the haircut. He's always referred to as, you know, a coiffed lawyer. And is his hair really that weird? I mean, the guy that he just has a head of hair. It's simply what he has. He doesn't have a pompadour like Carrie, for example. So, you know, I think his hair looks nice. This is an actual letter, which you probably can't read from there, but this is a letter that I was sent by a publication called The Funny Times, which is, they collect a lot of political cartoons, and they had received this from a Texas prison. And what this was a notice that one of the inmates in the prison was denied an issue of The Funny Times because of one of my cartoons. And if you notice the part that circled there, it basically says that any sort of publication that is, you know, explicitly for the purpose of achieving a breakdown of prisons through offender disruption, such as strikes or riots, that is why it was denied. And so I'm not going to read the whole cartoon, but basically it was this cartoon about a spray called Ridmex. Okay, now Ridmex is okay. I originally had this product called Gay Ban, which was the Republicans were spraying during the 2004 election, you know, as sort of you know, a wedge issue that they were using to distract people from more important issues with their gay marriage ban. And so Ridmex was my latest version of this. I guess that it's hard for me to tell whether the people at the prison, you know, thought I was being racist on one hand, or they just didn't like the message of the cartoon. But in either case, I just thought this was a really remarkable thing to receive. How to get Republicans to care about global warming. No more skiing. It's just not the same. Offshore tax shelters become precarious. So if Bermuda no longer exists, can we still use it as our address? Lack of mink-wearing opportunities. Damn it, world, you will know I paid $9,000 for this coat. And ice sculptures at black tie parties won't last as long. An hour ago, that was a Greek goddess with enormous hooters. Tisk! And that last panel was sort of derived from the Tyco CEO, Dennis Kozlowski, who was indicted and convicted for fraud. And he apparently used company funds to throw a massive party for his wife on the island of Sardinia, where they had ice sculptures of Michelangelo's David with vodka, I'm sure very expensive vodka, pouring out of his member. South Dakota State Senator Bill Napoli explains a potential exception to the state's near-total abortion ban. A real-life description to me would be a rape victim, brutally raped, savaged. The girl was a virgin. She was religious. She planned on saving her virginity until she was married. That girl could be so messed up that carrying her child could very well threaten her life. And that would be an actual quote. Soon, an abortion court is established to determine which sexual assault victims get the exception. Miss Katz, I gather you were only gently raped and that you own Black Sabbath Volume 4. I hear cribs are on sale at Walmart. The state legislature passes a bill listing some exceptions to the ban. A rape victim may seek an abortion in the following cases. She has been impregnated by a secular humanist. She belongs to the Society for the Repression of Natural Urges. She is a tender young milkmaid, but not if she has hairy armpits or if she has read Erica Jong. Little joke for the writers. Eventually, we have Sioux Falls City Hall. Atheists and fornicators, please use side entrance. Virgin parking only. And every so often, a politician really just gives a gift to the nation's cartoonists. And this is certainly one of those cases. Since then, I believe the ban has been struck down. The puppy principle. People seem more outraged by NFL star Michael Vick's cruelty to dogs than by cruelty to other humans. Torture, waterboarding, beaten to death, drowned and electrocuted, losing pit bulls, kill the bastard. Clearly canines are the key to unlocking Americans' compassion. Paul Kromkowski can barely afford to feed his dog Bowser on his minimum wage salary. Some weeks, Bowser survives in the bug exoskeletons he finds in the windowsills. That poor dog! Pay that man a living wage. It's been another grim day here in Darfur. 32 puppies from the UN's Dogs for the Decimated program, donated to cheer up refugees, have been brutally slaughtered by militias. For God's sake, why aren't we doing anything to stop this? The possibilities are limitless. New studies show that small amounts of marijuana can ease a dog's pain from arthritis and other ailments. Mopsy here is enjoying some space biscuits. I can't stand to see them suffer. Now, as I expected, a few people misinterpreted this cartoon, and they thought that I was downplaying what NFL star Michael Vick had done to losing pit bulls, and you know, I'm sure you've all heard that they were betting on them, and he drowned them and did all sorts of awful things. But I'll have you know that I am the owner of the cutest dog in Charlottesville, and no offense to any of you other dog owners out there, and I'm very much a dog person. But I just noticed this sort of strange discrepancy where these stories tend to really go viral when they are about cute animals. Humans, maybe not so much. We worship actors, but they'd be nobodies were it not for the lines written for them. We at Slowpoke imagine a world in which screenwriters are the stars. Oh my God, is that Marv Bunzel, writer for Scrubs? Shriek! Let me have your babies! Magazines would undoubtedly look a lot different. We have Entertainment Writer Weekly. Denise Dumps Dan says his plots were growing flaccid. Screen Beat Magazine. Tina's 50 fave words. You'll be shocked. Exclusive photos of Floyd at work. Free poster inside. Floyd is actually dressed about how I dress as I'm working during the day. As would celebrity auctions. I have here the original Apple IIc on which Throw Mama from the Train was written. Do I have an opening bid of $15,000? Why, it might be a nice change of pace. Now showing at Optiplex 4, Mission Cash Cow 9, written by Janice Krebs, and starring Tom Cruise. Want to go see this? Who's Tom Cruise? You know, it's funny, I drew this a little just before the writer's strike happened. And then sometimes that happens. You draw a cartoon, and then it all of a sudden becomes a lot more timely after the fact. But I had this idea kicking around for a while, It just seems so strange to me how much we worship actors and actresses, and yet writers just really get dumped on. Makes me mad. I threw that one in for you guys, too. Three of the Republican presidential candidates don't believe in evolution. Most GOP Congress members don't believe humans are contributing to climate change. Science contains the word sin, you know. Coincidence? I think not. Since you can't choose the science you like and don't like, we at Slowpoke propose denying the benefits of science to these politicians, starting with healthcare. Each one will be assigned a medieval physician. I did not descend from an ape. Come with me, sir. While politicians who accept empiricism will get modern-day drugs, these antibiotics will clear that infection right up. Those who don't will receive spins in a giant centrifuge designed to balance one's humors. Wait, you haven't drunk your treacle yet. After a while, even the staunchest deniers of scientific consensus will come around. Okay, Darwin was right. Now can I please have my Viagra back? And I took a little bit of artistic license with this one. They really did spin people around in centrifuges, but I believe it was in the Victorian era. I just wanted to draw a little, medieval monk. Pop culture periscope. I've been doing a lot of political strips lately here, but I also do a lot of cultural strips, especially about technology. And this one is about pixelated presence. In the online game Second Life and on the social networking site Facebook, people are paying real money for virtual things. Don't it? In Silicon Valley, web developer CyberTwit suddenly becomes aware of a problem. Millions of Africans lack even the most basic virtual goods. We must help them. A nonprofit is launched, JPEGs Without Borders. Our goal is to deliver over 500 terabytes of virtual donuts, plush toys, and rubber duckies to impoverished nations. Won't you donate now? Somewhere in Somalia, greetings, refugees. Please enjoy this picture of a donut. Compliments of the United States. This sucks. And I'm not sure how many of you are familiar with Facebook, but it's this social networking platform that allows you to give your friends just pictures of things. And for the you have to pay $1 a piece. And they have all sorts of things, cupcakes, puppies, even I've seen underwear. You can give them virtual underwear. And I have to say, I don't want to be a bad friend, but you'll never see me giving you virtual underwear or paying $1 to. I'm sorry. I hope that doesn't make me a bad person. This one, I sometimes like to draw cartoons about fashion as well. And this one's called Metrosexual Backlash. This one is not in the book. I'm actually moving on to a few more recent cartoons here. The scraggly hipster beard is the next frontier in cool for men tired of emo chic. Ahab meets rehab. Paired with arty glasses, it's not your father's machismo. The market quickly responds. Cell phones made from animal parts provide gruff yet quirky contrast to sleek gadgets. We have the Horner and the Hoofer. And indifference fragrance for men is an anti-cologne that smells faintly of mildew. The movement grows, leading to Hemingway night in bars throughout the land. The nacho is crisp. It is good. The beer head also rises. Of course, at some point, the look approaches Ted Nugent territory. And, I'm not sure if you've noticed the sort of, I'm not talking about neatly trimmed beards, okay? I don't have a problem with that at all. But there's sort of a big, burly beard look that I've noticed on some younger men. It's a little more common in New York, but I have seen it around here, so I felt I needed to address it. Season of Unreason. Oh, this one is actually in the book, too, so you get this one, too, if you happen to get the book. As usual, the presidential primaries have devolved into a grossly simplistic personality contest. Obama's smile is playing well in Kalamazoo. Yes, but Hillary's eyebrows have mesmerized Ypsilanti. How could we make the race even more trivial and idiotic? Monosyllabic debates. The Dems. Remember, only one. hope, change, fight, the repulse, bomb, fear, grunt. Aura divination. With us tonight is Contessa Montebaldi, who will probe the candidate's energy fields. Right now, I'm seeing a murky haze around Mitt Romney. For John McCain, I see flan, an enormous flan. And Rorschach voting machines. Please choose the blob you would most like to have a beer with. And this process, it honestly gets so stupid that I do sometimes have trouble writing cartoons about it. It makes you wonder why you even bother to follow politics at all when it gets so silly. But hopefully things will get improve a little bit as time goes on here with the election. It's been pretty bad so far. These days, everything you do online is being tracked. That's funny. How does this site know I like cat figurines? Next in targeted advertising, life cookies. With life cookies, tracking code leaves the internet and enters the real world. Number 121.37.246.8 now arriving at Big Lou's Porn Plenty. Soon, breakthroughs in technology allow the code to be placed in organic matter. This meal contains 12 tracking cookies. It also has a cookie. 3,000 miles away, number 283.9.41.7, developing indigestion, activate ad sequence. Moments later, still feeling gassy, Dave? Try Bloat X. You need Tums, Dave. Are you friends with Dave? Then you need Daisy Pure Air Fresheners. I read an article recently about how ISPs are actually getting in on the game of targeting advertising to you based on what websites you visited. And it's apparently a booming business right now, which seems to me crosses a line just a bit. The fate of the world hangs in the balance. Yet as we face war, global warming, and an economic meltdown, our presidential race is about this. Ha ha, he looks funny eating cheese balls. Elitist. Obama's opponent isn't exactly helping matters. He just doesn't understand plain simple folks like us. This would be a TV ad crafted by well-heeled consultants to manipulate opinions of the working class. Obama, of course, joins a long line of uppity black leaders. He just doesn't fit in. What's the guy supposed to do? Okay, are you happy now? Poser. And I drew this one during the run-up to the presidential primary in Pennsylvania, where I guess Hillary had run an ad featuring some very, very ordinary-looking people just talking about what an elitist Obama was. And I'm actually not... I didn't really support Hillary or Obama in the primaries. I liked Edwards. But it struck me as really playing into this right-wing meme of accusing anyone who's vaguely progressive of being elite. And there was a very good article in the New York Times a couple weeks ago about this idea of elitism and how it's sort of morphed from economic elites to basically it's just anti-intellectualism. I think we need to sort of remember that when we accuse, often progressives accuse their own of the mission of elite is, you know, a small coterie of people who want to hold on to power. Hillary Clinton has to act hawkish so people don't see her as a weak female. To live defeated and inglorious is to die daily. Barack Obama has to act soothing and conciliatory so people don't think he's an angry black man. Please allow me to place these healing stones in the nation's vertebrae. As a white guy, John McCain also has to deal with stereotypes. Senator McCain, how do you respond to allegations that you would be a protective father figure to the nation, or a tough cookie? But he's doing his best to dispel some of them. Geez, what do I have to do to get people to stop thinking I'm a rational male? I just can't get past these preconceptions. And he's accompanied there by Pastor John Hagee, who we know has had some very interesting things to say about Jews and Catholics. And that is going to be my last cartoon of the evening. My book, once again, is Slowpoke One Nation, Oh My God, and I'd be happy to doodle in it if you would like me to. But before we get to that, I'm happy to take your questions about my glamorous cartoonist lifestyle.
I was just going to ask you that. Actually, I'm thinking when I'm reading your cartoons, your comic strips, what do you call it?
Either one is fine.
Okay. And, I mean, I routinely read them. And,
great.
I'm thinking you're so in touch. And how do you derive your ideas? What do you do to get to that point where you actually create ongoing things?
Usually, whatever is just annoying me most that week, it starts, I guess, as sort of an emotional process. It's like whatever is just driving me nuts, that's a thing that I know I'll be motivated to write about. But, you know, there are those weeks where nothing's going on and I need to just plumb my notebooks to see what I've written in the past, and usually there's some nugget of something in there. Well, thank you.
What's your favorite news source, like CNN or not CNN, but alternative cable or what do you watch?
I don't have cable at all.
CNN's,
it's sort of hard to avoid in the airports nowadays.
and it can help you with your circle, right?
That's true. I do find when I'm in some situation where I'm watching it inadvertently, I do get riled up.
Yeah,
but on a day-to-day basis, I guess I read Talking Points Memo religiously, which is a, I guess you could call it a progressive blog, but I just sort of think it's an anti-corruption blog. And they do some very good journalism on there. And I read the New York Times every day. But those are the big ones, I guess.
You read the Hightower Report?
The Hightower Report. Sometimes I do. He actually gave me a blurb for this book. and I really do like his writing a lot. I think he's a good pundit. In the very back?
I was just wondering, who are some of the cartoonists that inspire you or that you admire?
Well, let's see. Starting out at a very early age, I grew up reading, Disney comics by Carl Barks. And he was actually a very sophisticated artist and writer. He probably had the earliest impact on me. Then Mad Magazine, of course. And more recently, I would say Matt Groening, certainly. B. Kleiben, who was most famous for his Cats book, but he also did a lot of very strange surrealist comics too. And I really like Roz Chast a lot. She's one of my favorites.
Mm-hmm. Where's Julie Julie?
Where is Julie Julie?
Yeah, she's not in your little.
I guess you're right. You're right. I went through them, and it just I don't know. I guess it just didn't seem like they would read as well as some of them, but and, you know, sometimes kids show up. maybe next time.
do you journal every day?
Do I journal?
Yeah.
That's an interesting question. I kept a diary for years when I was in middle school and high school, but I guess these days the closest I come to that is my blog, which. You know, I talk about some personal things on there, more about cartooning. But if you go to slowpokecomics.com, you can read whatever I'm thinking about that particular day. Anyone else?
Do you think you can talk a little bit about your process, your working process?
Let's see. Well, it starts with an impending deadline. And procrastination, and then more procrastination, and finally, a sense of panic. And then, if there's something that's going on that really is driving me nuts that week in the news, I'll try to work with that. And, you know, I actually do have some slides here, which I've presented before, of what it looks like as I'm writing them. And as you can see, it's fairly chaotic. I don't tend to think of the strips in very clear, organized fashion. It's sort of a winnowing process. And this is the rough version of this cartoon. And you can see this is what it looks like after I've inked it and added a few elements in Photoshop, and then I color it. But, so the writing part can be very unpredictable and can take a long time, but then once I draw it by hand and then just add a few things like the panel borders and occasionally some lettering in Photoshop. And that whole process takes about 6 hours, I'd say, from start to finish. I guess it's a thin marker, which is called a Tombow, and it's really not anything that fancy or expensive, but it allows me to, you know, a lot of cartoonists draw with a brush and ink and gets very involved, and you know, I've tried to use a brush, not very seriously, but I find that it's just too loose and I don't have enough control over it, so I use a marker that kind of approximates the tip of a brush. Someone.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember the source of that information about this senator, his quote?
Let's see. I think for a brief period of time it was just all over progressive blogs, and I'm trying to think of which one I was reading at the time. It might have been, you know, Think Progress or a few of those, but it caused quite a stir for a couple days, and it just seemed like the obvious subject for a cartoon. Mm-hmm.
So you've gone from being published locally to being published in independent newspapers to now, I think this is your third book now.
It is the third collection of the strip. Yeah.
So you showed us the letter you got from prison system.
Mm-hmm.
As you get a higher profile, have you been subject to more censorship or at least editorial suggestions?
Right. You know, I've actually been very lucky so far. Most alt weeklies just, I'm not even sure how closely they look at them before. I know they, Siva Weekly reads it, I know they do. The alt weeklies tend to be very cool about it. The worst that they do is sometimes they warp the shape of the cartoon to fit it into a certain size slot, which looks pretty weird sometimes. Censorship. This is sort of unrelated, but I drew a cover for the Siva Weekly a few years ago that included some crotchless panties. And I think that got them kicked out of the English Inn of 29. They were like, that's it. That's the last straw. We're not distributing your paper anymore. But thank goodness, you know, I've been very lucky. I think if I ran in daily newspapers, I'd be having a lot more trouble with censorship and people wanting to change words.
How did you decide on the style of
four-panel? For one thing, you want a weekly cartoon to be a pretty simple shape. Because like I said, these papers, a lot of them, the most important thing is just getting the cartoon to fit in a particular size space. Which can be a little bit annoying sometimes. They're like, oh, can you send it to us, you know, in a long panel format? And really, sometimes that's their top priority. But the four-panel thing, I guess, you know, I'm not sure who I'm, you know, I guess Tom Tomorrow and Ted Raw and those people kind of use a similar format. And also, it kind of gives me a structure to work with, so I don't necessarily have to think about layout too much. I mean, Sometimes they are, you know, I'll play around with the layout and I'll do one, like one giant panel or something like that, but just keeps it kind of nice and simple for me. All right. Is that everything?
You've been listening to the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit us at civopodcast.com.